This is Unhurried, and I'm your host, Doug Kyle. You know, life can feel like a race, rushing to the next thing, never time to reflect. But there is incredible value in slowing down with God to take in His perspective, His presence, His pace. Does a spiritual wipeout have to be the end of a vibrant faith? This is episode 17 of season 2 of Unhurried. I'm your host, Doug Kyle. Welcome to our listeners as well as our viewers who are watching this. Either you're listening where you get your podcasts or perhaps you're watching on YouTube. Great to have you along. And today I want to welcome Andrew, who's also with me. You've done this before, so now you're a veteran on this.
This is my second time on the show, and so I'm... I don't know if I'd say a veteran, but I do feel comfortable.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, after Andrew did last week, it was great. Not last week, several weeks ago, you said, hey, that was fun. Let's do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
well,
I took you up on it.
Glad to be back.
Yeah. So here you are. And Andrew serves on our staff here at Green Valley Church, one of our pastors. And great to have you along and listening along with us as well for this unhurried discussion about what we talked about in the recent Sunday message. This is meant to be, Unhurried is meant to be sort of a deeper dive into those things that we talk about. Today we're going to go into kind of part of it that we just didn't have the luxury to go into on Sunday morning, but I think it's a really helpful conversation for us to understand this part of the Bible and really God's heart, His heart for us when we fail, because we all do.
Yeah.
And what does that mean for our spiritual future? What does that mean for our spiritual lives? By the way, Andrew, since you were on, we've introduced a new feature, which is the listener question of the week.
Oh yeah!
So you've been hearing those. Well, this week
I like that part.
I do too. We save it till the end.
Well done, Kyle Duggan.
Yeah, Kyle Duggan was his idea, and we've implemented it. But this week I didn't get any listener questions, so I'm going to ask you right now to be thinking about a question.
Okay.
That, you know, might be pertinent to our listeners or about our podcast or something people might not know or would want to know. And I'll give you some time.
Well, I am a listener, so that would be a live listener question, right?
Okay, it would qualify.
Yeah.
Yeah, perfect. So be thinking about that, and then when we get to it, then I'll ask you to ask me the question, and it'll be new to me too. So hopefully you don't throw me too much. But we'll do that here pretty soon. This weekend we gave away a bunch more mugs.
Yeah, I saw that the exchanges happening.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Does it seem like people are tracking with it and excited about it?
Yeah, and I like seeing there's more of those yellow mugs out in the lobby.
Yeah, people are carrying around, and it seems like they are they're into it, and they're not giving away how they got them. They're just saying, well, you have to listen to the podcast.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so that would be that's kind of what we hope. We're hoping that they sort of this sort of subtle way of just getting the word out, and people seem to be excited about it that they have them. So we have a few more left. If you are just now listening, haven't listened to our previous ones, and you don't know what we're talking about, we have these on YouTube. You can see it. I'm holding it up. These left-handed friendly Unhurried mugs that work equally well for left-handers and right-handers, and they're available.
An important feature. Right.
That's the selling point. And if you want them, you just simply you said it to me. So what do people have to say?
Oh, am I allowed to review? I guess it's
yeah,
the show, right?
That's how they know.
So, yeah, you just go up to Doug in the morning or Ryan, I think, right?
Yeah, maybe you too now.
Oh, okay, and me, and just say, hey, good morning, give me my mug.
Good morning, give me my mug. People are like so apologetic right after they say that. They're like, oh, I can't say that, but yeah, we asked you to. So
there was permission given.
Permission was given to come up and just demand your mug. And I think the mug is really cool. If the backstory here, for those who haven't been following along, is that actually I was kind of joking about someday we should have mugs as merch, because it kind of fits the Unhurried idea. You're sitting down having a cup of coffee, talking about these things. And a very kind viewer donated them.
Amazing.
Said, let's make it happen. And so they've been donated. And so freely you have received, freely give. So we're giving based on what someone who's given to us as well. So, hey, this is going to be important for our conversation today. So I'm going to start with this for you, Andrew. Okay. What's your go-to breakfast?
Go-to breakfast. When you say go-to, like what I have the most or like what I kind of would like appreciate
you
the
wish
most.
You had the most. Yeah, either one or both.
So I like to do a simple breakfast burrito. Mm-hmm. It's just flour tortilla, scrambled eggs, cheese, and pato verde sauce. Pato is just a brand.
What is pato verde? Oh, that's the brand?
The brand of, it's just a specific hot sauce that I like. Or actually, my family likes it.
Yeah, they're not a sponsor, by the way. We're not.
Oh, yeah. Are we allowed to say like other brands on
it's
this?
It's fine, but hopefully they'll become a sponsor. So hopefully it gets tagged and they go, yeah, we'll sponsor you.
That's a go-to. I also like doing French toast on Saturday mornings if we've got the morning free.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That sounds amazing. It sounds really good. Well, the reason I say that ties in is because in this passage that we looked at Sunday and we want to like go a little deeper into, Jesus is having breakfast with his disciples on the shore. And it leads
a high protein breakfast, actually, right?
Yeah, fish, maybe some pita bread or something mm-hmm. like that going on. And yeah, definitely fish for breakfast, which I've never been a fan of fish for breakfast.
I've done it like camping.
Yeah.
You know, you go fishing and then like having like fresh trout or bass when you're, I do like that. But at home, I don't know that I've ever had fish for breakfast.
In England, it's kind of a deal. We've been there several times, and in England, they want some kind of very untasty fish.
Oh, yeah. Very bland.
Yeah, I don't get it. I can't remember what it's called, but they often have it with their breakfast.
All right.
Yeah, it doesn't work for me. But what does work for me is French toast, like you're saying, mm-hmm. or, you know, Cindy, whatever Cindy's making, because she makes me a, you know, amazing breakfast. So here in the middle of this passage, a story of Jesus really reinstating Peter and asking a question. In the middle of that, we have what has become my new favorite life verse. It's John 21:12, and it says, Jesus said to them, come and have breakfast.
Yeah. So that's a good life verse.
There you
right?
go. That's my new life. I found, you know, I looked at it and I go, why haven't I memorized that?
Right. And you can have breakfast any time of day, really.
Any meal is good for breakfast, right?
Yeah. Which I guess if Jesus is going to do breakfast with fish, then why not do breakfast any time of day, right? I mean, Jesus really, maybe he's the one that really kind of got that rolling.
Right.
The whole like breakfast for dinner,
breakfast
for lunch.
For every meal. Yeah. So come and have breakfast, my life verse. If you guys don't have a life verse out there, you're looking for one, I would just commend that to you. It's a great one. I do have some more serious life verses too, but I'll leave you with that one. So the passage that we...
I actually thought you were going to go more serious.
Yeah.
So I was kind of like surprised, like, oh,
my new life verse, yeah. Come.
But I could get on board with this one.
Yeah, it's a great verse. It's a great verse. Then they end up having breakfast. There's about seven disciples and Jesus that are gathered around. This is now a couple, maybe a week or two after the resurrection. Mm-hmm. Jesus has not yet ascended. He is having these dramatic appearances in several cases and interacting with all kinds of people. At this particular time, he interacts with these seven disciples who had been out fishing all night, had gotten skunked, had not caught a thing. He meets them there. He does a miracle. He invites them to the shore. They have breakfast together, and it leads to this after breakfast conversation between mm-hmm. him and Peter. We kind of unpacked that conversation in detail on Sunday, but just to give you the quick flyover, Jesus pulls Peter aside and asks him in three different ways, mm-hmm. "Do you love me?" And Peter then answers, "Yes, Lord, I do love you." That immediately after each question, Jesus then gives him assignment to either feed his lambs or shepherd his sheep, kind of the same idea said in a couple different ways. And what was, I think, so amazing about that question is "Do you love me?" is twofold. One is that he said it three times. It was mm-hmm. part of Peter's restoration, even as he had denied the Lord three times. Now Jesus was restoring him. But also the question then becomes pretty timeless. Mm-hmm. It's not only a question that he asked Peter, it's a question that we all can live with as well. Do you love me? I actually phrase it as the most important question that Jesus mm-hmm. ever asked us.
Appropriately, right?
Yeah. It seems like it is. I mean, it doesn't set it up that way, but there's lots of reasons to back that up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, based on Jesus saying that loving God and loving our neighbors was the most important mm-hmm. commandment. So this is a key part of what it means to be a believer.
Well, and I love that that is what Jesus was using to let Peter, you know, to reconcile with Peter.
Yeah.
It was the love that Peter had for Jesus, because obviously Jesus loved Peter, and phrasing the question that way, I think, one, it affirms or reminds Peter how much Jesus loved him.
Yes.
And then gives Peter the opportunity to show that back.
Yeah, and it's... I agree with that 100%. I love that Jesus is drawing him back into the relational aspect of what it meant to follow him. We so often feel like if we've blown it, especially when we've blown it in a significant way or in a, you know, a really devastate, and we're really devastated by it, as Peter must have been, we feel like we've lost that relationship with mm-hmm. Jesus, and it's been forever tainted now.
Yeah, that's always going to be hanging over his head.
Yeah.
Right, would certainly, I mean, that's a legitimate concern. That was the real possibility, that Peter would live with that guilt his whole life.
Absolutely. And to have him then give him, for Jesus to give Peter the opportunity to verbalize it, because that must have been the hardest thing for Peter, is that he actually said those words. He said, "I deny the Lord. I don't know him. I've never known him. You must be mistaken. He, you know, I don't know who he is." To actually vocalize those mm-hmm. words, to hear himself saying those words, must have haunted him. And for Jesus to give him the opportunity to not just feel back connected with Jesus, mm-hmm. like, oh, I guess we're on the same page again, but to actually articulate it, to mm-hmm. say it out loud, to hear himself saying it to Jesus, to me, that was such a healing moment for Peter.
Yeah. Well, and I think that the line that John gives us, right, or that we have in the Gospel of John, is that the third time, right, that this hurt Peter.
Yes.
And that's what's so interesting about healing, especially when it comes to relationships, right, when there was a wrong that has occurred. Usually what needs to be done in order to fix it requires some more pain, right? It's going to usually hurt. That, like, to apologize to someone, to admit that you offended them, that can hurt.
Yes.
Right? And but that's necessary in order to bring about healing to that hurt, because the other person was hurt.
Oh, my goodness. That's so good. So good. So even these principles, you can think about any you know, normal human relationship we have too. Sometimes it's hard to go into that moment of restoration.
Yeah.
Because it's painful.
Right.
It's painful to revisit it. That's, you know, in the message I was saying, Peter probably didn't want to go here.
No
way. You know, this was not a topic he was hoping that we could just sweep this under the rug and, you know, in his mind probably never be as good as it was before, but, you know, let's move on. But Jesus, he forced the issue.
Yeah.
These questions. Yeah.
And it creates this awkward and even for Peter, this painful moment, but that was really the best way to help Peter move beyond it, right?
Right. You had to go through the pain to get to the healing.
Because a lot of times the temptation is, well, let's just pretend like it didn't happen.
And just smooth it over.
Yeah, and then we'll just pick up where we left off in our relationship or our friendship.
Yeah.
Right, and then try and move on. But if it's not like addressed directly in some way, and there's so many different ways to address a situation like that directly, but if it's not addressed directly in some way, it is just going to, it's going to kind of create this dark cloud.
And that's why
it doesn't go away.
Absolutely. Yeah, so true. And in this passage, when it says that Jesus asked him a third time, that, and that's what hurt him. There's such a direct connection to the three denials. The third time becomes, you know, underlined in the Bible in a sense, because this is what triggered both the hurt as well as the restoration.
Yeah.
It's to realize, as you know, what Peter says each time is, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. And it's the idea, I think we tend to, you know, put our focus on Peter's answer, yes, Lord, I love you. Mm-hmm. But each time he said, Lord, you know that I love you, or you, in the third time, you know all things. You know that I love you. And it's his knowledge of what's going on. Jesus didn't need Peter to confess what he had done, because first of all, Jesus predicted he would. He knew ahead of time he was going to do it. He knows all things, so he knew that it happened, and the fact that he did this three times shows that he knew what had happened. What he needed Peter to be restored and to be able to move beyond it as well.
Right.
So it's a great account of how Jesus longs to restore us as individuals past those times of great disappointment. When we disappoint him, we disappoint ourselves, and we disappoint others. His passion is for us to move beyond that, to get through it, and be brought back into that deep relationship with him, and to realize that we haven't lost it, that has not disqualified us, or is not going to then, for the rest of our lives, ruin the relationship that we can have mm-hmm. with the Lord. So it was a great story to kind of go into and think about that. But what I want to do in our time together today is I want to answer the question maybe some people were thinking when they heard it: why didn't you go into the whole different word for love in that? And if you don't know what I'm talking about, let me just give you the backstory here. I'll tell you how I heard it, and then I'm going to debunk it and tell you why I think it's not that valuable for us to think about it this way, and how much more powerful it is if we don't go there. So I remember I first heard this. I bet I was a late teens, early 20s. I heard someone speaking on this passage, and they made a point that the word that Jesus used for love when he asked the question was agape. Peter, do you agape me? Agape, of course, is the Greek word for deep spiritual unconditional love. It's usually used for God's love for humankind. And so he says, Peter, do you agape me? And they pointed out that when Peter answered, he said, yes, Lord, you know that I phileo you. He used a different word for love, the word phileo, which means more human love. It's more of a friendship love, or a love that's built on deep affection, mm-hmm. But a little bit different than self-giving love that we see in agape. So the town Philadelphia, it right. comes from two
brotherly love.
Two Greek words, phileo and adelphos, which means brotherly love. So I heard, they said, you know what? Jesus said, do you love me, this high level, you know, best love ever? And then they made the point, Peter just said he phileoed him, which means, you know, kind of like, I sort of love you.
Yeah.
It's kind of the way it kind of came across. You know, not maybe as much as you think you want me to, but I love you like a brother.
Kind of qualifying his answer. Like, well, I don't know about agape, but how about phileo, Jesus?
Yeah.
You know I phileo love you.
Right. And then they go on to say, and the second time Jesus asked the question, again, he asked Peter, do you agape me? And Peter's answer is the same. Yes, Lord, you know that I phileo you. So they go, there you go. Jesus is still calling him to this higher love, and Peter can only, you know, bring himself to say sort of a conditional love, not a full love. And then it seems like the slam dunk for this way of looking at this passage is that you come to the third question, and now Jesus asks, Peter, do you phileo me? And Peter says, yes, Lord, you know all things. you know that I phileo you. And so the idea there is that Jesus was sort of asking Peter for this high love that Peter always qualified it and never quite got to the love. And then Jesus sort of settled for...
He kind of has to accommodate Peter.
He has to accommodate Peter, say, okay, good enough. I guess I'll just settle for, you know, a B plus love rather than a A plus love. Those are that, you know, when I first heard that, I thought, wow, that's like amazing. And it kind of, you know, especially when you look at the phrase that said, you know, Peter said, you know, all things, then, you know that I phileo you, you think, okay, well, you know, maybe that works. But as I've studied it and had a chance to teach on this passage quite a few times over the years, I actually feel like, that's actually not a very helpful way to look at it. Matter of fact, I think it actually somehow, you know, it veils what the passage is really all about.
Kind of can distract maybe from the point.
It can distract from the point and actually take us down the wrong road with mm-hmm. it. Leave us with the wrong message of what that story is all about. So I want to just give you four reasons why I don't think it flies.
Okay.
All right. If you've heard it, I apologize to those who may, or if you've, you know, taught it out there, you know, at least consider this as you think about it, because I think there's something to it. Now, the first point is that phileo and agape are actually used interchangeably in the New Testament for God's love. It's an overstatement to say agape is always God's love and phileo is always human love and agape is always better than phileo. They're just simply terms for love. Just like in our language, we have different terms for love. You know, your wife might ask her husband, "Honey, do you love me?" And he might say, "Yes, I adore you." And that doesn't feel like it's, why didn't you say love me?
Wait a minute, you only adore me?
Yeah, exactly. They're just interchangeable in some sense, you know, and then she'll say, well, no, I mean, do you really love me? And he says, I cherish you so much. And finally she says, do you really cherish me? He goes, yes, I cherish you. And that wouldn't be a settling for less of a love.
I would say you're actually impressed with the husband's response, that he's not just going with the simple, I do love you.
Yeah.
He's actually thinking of other ways other aspects of love that he's going to focus on, right?
Right. And in the Bible, Old and New Testament, we often see this where when you reinforce a point, you use one term in the question mm-hmm. and a different term in the answer. It's just a way of fleshing out what all of that means. So let me just give you an example. In John 5:20, the same gospel writer, it says, for the Father loves the Son and shows him all that he himself is doing. And the word for love there is phileo.
Hmm.
So here is the Father loving the Son with phileo love.
In a sense, talking about brotherly love between God the Father and God the Son.
Yes, and that's got to be the highest love possible, right? This phileo love. So if Peter is saying, I phileo you, he could, in John's mind, who wrote both, you know, both those sentences, he may well have been saying, I love you like the Trinity.
Well, because that was John, the verse you just read, that was John what?
Yeah, that was that one's John 5:20.
Oh, yeah. So since Peter may have heard Jesus refer to that kind of, you know, say that. Right?
For sure.
Peter could have had that in mind.
He could have had that in mind. I mean, we're going to the weeds here a little bit, but this is kind of fun to talk to you about it because you get what I'm saying here. Jesus and Peter spoke Aramaic.
Right.
So they didn't speak Greek. So for us to be, you know, taking these Greek words, that is the way that John wrote in as he translated what they said, what they initially said, you know, would have been not Greek words, but Aramaic words. Of course, John is giving us the meaning of those words as he translates it to Greek. But the whole point is that John saw phileo as a way of talking about God's love, for sure. And so to have Peter use the word phileo would not be a discounting or a kind of a second level love.
Yeah, John wasn't using it, at least in other times, as this lesser type of love.
Right.
They both are elevated.
Right. And then there's, just to give you another example, in case you think that was just a one-off, in John 16:27, Jesus says this, "For the Father himself loves you because you have loved me and have believed that I came from God." Talking to his disciples, the Father himself loves you, and the word is phileo. So God, not only God's love for the you know, Father's love for the Son, but also God's love for God's people is defined as phileo. So for that alone, I feel like it's definitely a stretch to say that there's this, you know, perfect love and this less than perfect love that's being contrasted in this passage.
As if God is only capable of agape love.
Right. Yeah. Love is much broader and bigger than that. And in the Greek has these wonderful terms that talk about love, and all of them just are nuanced a little bit, but they still can apply to deep heavenly love. The second reason that I think it's worth kind of debunking that position is that it says that, you already pointed this out, Andrew, but it says that Peter was hurt, and he was hurt because Jesus said a third time, "Do you love me?" Well, if the whole point was that Jesus had changed the terminology, we would expect John to say something like, "He was hurt because Jesus changed the word."
Yeah, Jesus.
You know, that's why he was hurt.
Uh-huh.
Instead, when it says he was hurt because he said it a third time, the emphasis is on how many times he said it, not that he changed the wording. In fact, saying three times kind of implies that each one was the same question, basically.
Yeah. And that they were seen as equal, appropriate responses.
Yes, exactly. So it's Peter was hurt because Jesus said it three times, not because Jesus changed the terminology. So that to me is another case that is worth thinking. Yeah. Three, Jesus gives them the same, he gives Peter the same assignment in each case. And in fact, he gives them the very same assignment, feed my lambs, the first and the third time. The second time, it's the assignment, shepherd my sheep, which is, again, very similar idea. But you would expect, if the whole point was that now Peter just couldn't get where Jesus wanted him to get, couldn't, you know, drum up that kind of love in his life, you'd expect Jesus to sort of modify the assignment. Sort of like, oh, okay, well, since you're going to agape me, you only phileo me, you know. But the assignment was exactly the same with the agape question.
How about
question.
Just encourage my sheep?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, okay, just encourage them. Maybe you don't
have to love
them
or feed them or...
Yeah,
just encourage them.
Yeah, just maybe build a gate or something. You know, you can have some role here, but maybe you're not going to be the chief, you know, source
chief
of their
shepherd.
Food.
Yeah,
yeah.
But he
doesn't
do that.
He doesn't do that. He gives them the exact same assignment as if his answer in the first, second, and third time were all appropriate answers.
Mm-hmm.
What he was longing for, because he gave him the same assignment.
Yeah.
But to me, the most significant thing is, and this is why I said I think it can veil what the story is all about. If we go down that route, that it's all about the change of the word love, then it changes the meaning of the story.
Mm-hmm.
It changes really the whole point, and it changes it significantly. Rather than it being about Jesus reinstating Peter after his failure, it becomes Jesus sort of settling for a half-hearted love from Peter. As
right.
if the whole point is, I guess, you know, Peter can't really get over it, and so Jesus sort of has to say, well, I guess it's good enough. You know, I guess I'll have to use you anyway. You
right.
know?
Like, I guess I'm stuck with you, Peter, so we'll do it with what we can.
Yeah, and sort of as if Peter was being called to so much more and he just couldn't handle it. And so Jesus sort of said, well, I'm good enough, but I want you to kind of feel guilty about it. You know, I want you to realize, you know, okay, I'll use your words and tell you you're only filleting me, phileoing me.
Which is, I mean, to be honest, is kind of a human thing to do as well, right? That's a temptation when somebody has wronged us and they apologize. Sometimes we're not, you know, we still want to like...
make them feel bad.
Yeah, let them suffer a little bit more because you feel like... it's a little too soon for restoration.
Right.
But that, obviously that wasn't the way Jesus was thinking at all. Right. He was doing this to make it clear to Peter that, hey, It's time to get back. It's time to get back in the saddle.
Right. It's time to get back in the saddle. That's what he was. He was really reinstating him and recommissioning him for ministry. Mm-hmm. You know, Matthew famously has a great commission for his disciples into his mission for the kingdom. Well, in many ways, for the Gospel of John, this is the Great Commission, except for rather than being a widespread commission, it's a very individual commission. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, it is the recommissioning, and it's certainly very personal for us because it comes out of failure. Hmm. And to show that Jesus is now recommissioning Peter, who he's already called and trained and used, he's saying, your failure does not keep you from being a part of my kingdom work.
Yeah. It's also interesting to think out, like, so Jesus, you know, kind of gave Peter a heads up that this was going to happen.
Well,
right,
a very clear.
I guess that kind of he told Peter it was going to happen, and I imagine there was a reason for that, right? Maybe kind of trying to prepare him for that. It's possible, and what that the process he was going to go through, but then you could see Jesus now anticipating who Peter is going to become,
right?
Especially in the book of Acts. I mean, we're looking at a very different Peter.
Yes,
and it really kind of this is the launching point of like Peter 2.0. Just or kind of Jesus is now preparing him again to be when he has the gift of the Spirit that he is going to be this bold leader that is going to lead the charge spreading the gospel.
And it must have been such an important part of his message from that point on as he met with people and they dealt with feeling like they could never get past their sin, they could never get past their failures, they could never you know, really be good enough to serve the Lord. Peter had a great testimony. He had a great story to tell, and he became this living proof that there's a future on the other side of failure.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't have to be fatal.
I mean, there are a lot of situations, right, where when we fail and then we've been restored in one way or another, but, you know, we've learned from that. A lot of times that fear of failure is lifted from us. And so we're not going through whatever it is that we're trying to do, worried about, okay, I hope I don't fail, I hope I don't fail. Once we've been restored and we've moved on from that failure.
Yeah, that's part of the healing. That's part of the restoration. That's part of the victory.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the success that we have on the other side is being able to really realize that and to absorb it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, if, you know, I imagine there were maybe some people on Sunday morning who heard my message and they knew this, they heard this teaching about the two different words for love and were wondering, how come Doug is not bringing that out? I guess he just doesn't have time. There's some thought that went into not saying it because if you say that, you know, those who say that, like, what's the point of the, what is the point of the story? Then you're basically saying that Jesus can't completely restore us, that once we've failed, we're going to always have kind of this second level love for the Lord. You can't bounce back.
Yeah, that you can't be fully restored, which is kind of the opposite of the gospel, right?
It's the opposite of the gospel.
Opposite of what Jesus came to do.
And to me, it's the opposite of that. Episode is all about.
It also, I think, can be taken as if, you know, God's love or Jesus' love was so much greater than Peter's, which is true.
It's true.
There's nothing, like, that's absolutely true, but the Bible has made that clear really from beginning to end. By that point, I don't think listeners or readers would have really needed to know that lesson. That's not the lesson they needed to learn at this point.
Right.
If you've been following along for at least from the beginning of the gospel.
Yeah.
It's that, the point here was that, no, when you fail, God will be faithful to restore you.
Yes.
If you're willing to, come to him, humbly like Peter did.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I love that, you know, Peter didn't even really come to Jesus. Jesus came to him.
That's a good point. Yeah.
You know, Peter was off fishing.
He was kind of ready to walk off. Like, well, yeah, that's the end of that.
And if Jesus hadn't initiated it, it may have never happened. Mm-hmm. But Jesus initiated it, and he chases us. When we are feeling agitated and distant and like we failed in our relationship with him, God never lets us go. Mm-hmm. He continues to pursue us and bring it to mind. And I don't know, maybe even for some of our listeners right now, this is kind of hitting home and you're going, see, that's what I needed to hear. I needed to know that there was, that this doesn't have to be a roadblock in my future walk with the Lord and my relationship with him.
Mm-hmm. And, well, you said in the message that a lot of times it's these, it can be those situations, whatever might be coming to a listener's mind, that God is planning to use in very powerful, significant ways.
He has an assignment for you. Just like he did for Peter, he has an assignment for each one of us. Mm-hmm. And he always, you know, he's always working with broken people, but that brokenness doesn't disqualify us from serving him. Well, you... You've taught on this passage a few times over the years. Have you thought that through as far as just the difference here?
Like some of the points that I would have come to?
Yeah, or, you know, I think we kind of talked about this very thing.
Yeah, so right? This was probably 15 years ago, you had assigned me to preach on this passage. It's actually, I think you could probably say every passage you preach on kind of becomes your new favorite. But I've always remembered this passage, and it's really been very meaningful to me over the years, thinking about the way, I mean, I love the way that Jesus, kind of to your point earlier, that Jesus, not only did he seek out Peter while he was out fishing and the others, but he also pulls Peter aside to like take him on, like it almost seems like they kind of walk off together with, mm-hmm. you can almost picture Jesus's arm around Peter as they're talking and walking.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the two different words for love, the two Greek words, you actually pointed me in that right direction. You're like, Andrea, like sometimes people teaching on this passage will really get into kind of the differences. And you were saying, oh, it's probably more just stylistic, right? Want it to sound right and make sure you focus on the point of the restoration.
Yeah. So this is, If some of you are thinking, Doug, I think I heard you teach that, at least not in the last 15 years.
It's been at least 15 years.
I've got at least 15 years. I can say that at that point, that was not my my line of thinking on this. So, you hear it a lot. You hear it a lot, and you know, to me, it's intriguing. It's kind of gets tantalizing a little bit, like, ooh, that's kind of cool and scholarly or whatever. But to me, in the end, the powerful message of this has nothing to do with the choice of the Greek word. It has everything to do with the fact that this was three times, and three times correlated very directly to his three denials. He gave him three chances to affirm his love and to restore him back into ministry and in his journey with Jesus.
Yeah. And, and I think when it comes to restoration, the pitfalls can be to, try to like move on too quickly or not really address the wrong, right. To kind of try and brush over it and just move on. And that creates problems. And so Jesus wasn't going to do that. He couldn't, in a sense, the church that Jesus was getting started couldn't afford that. And then the other pitfall, right, is to not recover.
Yeah.
And to just kind of like, you know, as if Peter, he were just to go out and keep fishing. Which, I mean, fishing, great career, but that's not what God had called Peter to.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a great point. I mean, there's going to be consequences for our failures, and there may be a season of healing that needs to take place and but your restoration in your relationship with the Lord, that can happen right away. And that actually will serve the process of restoring with other people as well.
Yeah. And that process is really more for you than it is for God.
Yes. Yes. Well, hopefully that's helpful to kind of think that through. It sounds like a first glance of, well, you just want to debunk this theory, but in doing so, I think it makes the story jump off the page even more, and the power of the message of what this is all about. So hopefully it's been helpful for you as you're listening along. And I know I hear some of you are on walks when you're listening to this, you're working around the house. One listener this week is taking the podcast with her on a cruise.
Oh, nice.
And I don't know if you heard, like, about 2 months ago. Yeah, we had these random visitors on Sunday morning that were on the Disney cruise ship.
Right. Spectacular visitors, really.
Well, spectacular because one played the role of Thor and the other the role of Ariel on the Disney cruise ship. And I feel horrible because I don't remember their real names, but
maybe that's what they're going for.
I remember their characters. And anyway, this woman in our church is going on a Disney cruise this week. And so she is hoping to bump into them, to track them down, to find out that they're actually the same ones that visit our church. And she's taking an unhurried mug with her to give to them. And as like a reminder, because they were kind of interested in following along on the podcast. So
it's a fantastic idea.
Yeah. So that's a story that's developing.
We'll see how that goes. When are they going on the cruise, or are they on it now, you think?
She's going sometime this week.
Okay.
This week. So I think she took the mug with her last Sunday to give to them. And so we'll see. This is a developing story. We'll
Thor
keep
and
you
Ariel,
posted.
We have unhurried mugs for you. Just be patient.
Yeah, and so that's the point. They said they were going to start listening to the podcast. So there's a possibility that they might seek her out.
Yeah,
you know. So if, as you say, if Thor and Ariel, if you're listening because you've been following along ever since you visited our church a couple months ago, we got a really nice left-handed friendly mug coming your way. Just keep an eye out. All right. We've also had the listener questions. So have you come up with a question that maybe as a listener or our listeners might want to know?
Okay.
If it's a really hard question, I'm just going to turn it back on you. So, think carefully about it.
What are some of so I am right-handed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really just through stories like you've heard other people talk about the frustrations of being left-handed that, you know, there are things that you just take for granted when you're right-handed.
Mm-hmm.
Some of your top kind of frustrations of being left-handed.
So I met a guy on Sunday who said, I didn't know you're left-handed. We have that in common. And we did a little, left-handed fist bump. And so anybody in within the sound of my voice who is left-handed will know these already. But,
okay. For us righties.
For you writers, just
that
to
can be a little
be
more
a little
empathetic,
more empathetic, a little more sensitive to
your plight.
Our plight in life. These are all, first world problems. But those ringed binders,
a three-ring binder?
Like a three-ring binder, or even like a notebook that has kind of the coiled binding on the side, that kind of stick up.
Yeah.
Well, they work perfectly for right-handers. As a matter of fact, any book that opens up
it's intrusive.
Yeah, but if you're left-handed, your wrist, your hand is just going to go straight across those ridges, and you end up with just like, dents in your hand. So
Is there enough of a market out there that they would sell left-handed notebooks like that?
Down at Seaport Village, there used to be a left-handed shop, and they had notebooks
I remember that.
They had notebooks that the binding was on the other side.
If they're not there anymore, that might answer my question. Maybe there isn't the market.
Yeah, there's not really a market for it. The other thing, and this is probably more, like people are going, really? We're talking about this, but you asked.
Well, listener questions, isn't this what we're...
Absolutely.
These are the kind of questions we ask.
I guess so. It's not like, what does the Bible say? It's just, tell me about that. Well, the other thing is scissors. And this was actually, I didn't realize it, but scissors are made for right-handers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm always, I've never been really good at cutting, and I didn't know why. It's because I'm left-handed. And then like a couple Christmases ago, Cindy got me left-handed scissors. Ooh. And it was like a game changer. And I'm going, this is what you have all experienced.
You finally got to experience what it's like to truly cut a piece of paper.
All these years, it's like, this is so much easier. So I have some left-handed scissors that, and now, my frustration with mugs has been solved with our unhurried mugs. So those are just a few of the pet peeves.
No, I could see that.
Yeah.
That would be quite maddening.
So when Ryan and I were talking about this podcast way back a year and a half ago, I said I wasn't going to rant on, you know, like some podcasts are just people ranting. I go, this isn't going to be but I guess there's a little bit of a
there's
rant.
There's always room to rant a little bit within moderation.
Yes. But I appreciate you asking the question and being, you know, empathetic and sensitive to the cross that I bear.
Yeah, I know. Well, and it's nice that you have other lefties to connect with and commiserate with.
Yeah.
Everyone needs that group too.
Yeah, it's a very right-handed world that we live in. All right, well, thanks so much for everyone. Andrew, thank you very much for joining us, for being a part of this. I hope this has been an encouragement to each of you. Ryan's still going to be working behind the scenes to get this all up and ready for all of you. So thank you to him. And thank you for each of you for following along. Until next time, this has been Unhurried with me, your host, Doug Kyle, and I look forward to talking soon.